Stop. Stop being so mean.
Welcome to the Mac Chronically Ill Girl podcast. I am your host, Sonya D. Welcome. I would like to take the time out to thank our newest listeners, people who have decided to subscribe to the podcast and listen to my voice on a monthly basis. And to you, I thank you. I hope that you are letting everyone else know and screaming to the rooftops about this podcast and sharing with them all of the information that I am able to give to you. Welcome to the podcast where we discuss the issues that affect disabled and chronically ill people as well as the people who love us. This podcast is for all of you and those who are curious and perhaps you just like to hear the sound of my voice. And with that, thank you. We're going to do something new today. Okay, so this is the part of the program where I insert a news report or I depart you with some information that I received over the past month, but I'm going to introduce a new segment today titled The Tiny But Epic Editorial. This is where we will talk about a small subject in the news and give our epic opinion on things. But open it up for you, the listener, to shoot me tweets and Facebook posts about what you think. So once you listen to this piece, please log on to Twitter, our new Twitter account. You can find us on Twitter at ChronicallyThe, and our new Facebook page at the Mad Chronically Ill Girl podcast, and give us your mini but epic opinion about our segment today, and we will probably publish it for a future episode. So here it is. The Pity Gift. I found this on a Yahoo News story about a woman who was in the store with her disabled child who happens to use a wheelchair when she was approached by someone. And here's the story. I don't want to read the whole thing to you, but this is the gist. My son and I went to Chuck E. Cheese a few weekends ago. We don't go often, and it's an enormous treat when we do. This particular time, my daughter, who's 6 years older than my son, was at a sleepover, and I promised my son that we could go see Chuck E. Cheese. We usually go as soon as they open the doors. It's easier for my son to maneuver his wheelchair around 50 other people who aren't in there surrounding them. So I guess they went to a crowded Chuck E. Cheese on this Saturday. Luca's 5, so he doesn't care nor understand the concept of tickets equal prizes. He wants to play, eat pizza, and play some more like any other kid. If he gets tickets, awesome. If not, he couldn't care less. He's out there playing his heart out. So we had arrived and we were making our way through when a woman and a child began staring. No, this isn't the different part. People stare all the time at Luca. You don't see children in wheelchairs all the time. I get it. We ignore it and go on about our way. However, this duo did not stop staring. Then they chatted for a second about something and began to walk over to us. I am always ready to answer questions about Luca or listen to their statements or whatever it was they wished to discuss. I have heard all kinds of things. Instead of questioning Luca's abilities or telling me some cliche uplifting phrases, they wanted to give Luca a toy ball. The child had won. A pity ball. The ball was being given to him because he's disabled. They were giving him a toy because they felt sorry for him. I politely declined, but they insisted. So I lied. I told the mother Luca was allergic to the material the ball was made of, and that ended the conversation. I want to point out that I understand that it was a thoughtful gesture, and that they meant no ill will, But if I allowed this gift to be given, I would set a precedent. I didn't want Luka to accept the ball. He shouldn't receive handouts just because he has a disability. I don't want him to think that he is entitled to things because of his disability. He can earn a ball or anything else he wants to, for that matter. No one should feel sorry for him. There are days his disability wins, but we never let it consume us. Luka is an active 5-year-old who participates in adaptive sports, attends kindergarten, and works very hard to accomplish things. He can do anything else any other child could do, period. Okay, my friends and listeners, what do you think? Was she being harsh? Was she right to reject that gift? My personal opinion, well, I think that these things are kind of hit or miss. I mean, I've been out and I've seen children, not necessarily with disabilities. I've offered candy or chips or something. I even gave quarters to a young lady who was playing and her parents didn't have the money for her to, you know, put in these quarters to get this plush toy. And I just happened to have an insane amount of quarters on my person. But I would ask first, of course, and if the parent had a problem with it, I would never, ever insist. I would just leave it alone. Once the parent says no, they mean no. I don't think I would have pushed. However, like she stated, I too don't think this woman meant any harm. But I do think that that could send the wrong message too. I mean, look, this podcast is titled The Mad Chronically Ill Girl. And it's an ironic term because people tend to think that we're angry and upset all the time. I get it. However, people should also understand that being disabled is not a pitiful thing. I am not an object of pity. I'm fine. When people look at me and they act sad that I'm in a wheelchair, I always smile and I tell them, hey, without this chair, I'd be practically bedridden. So I wouldn't have the ability to go anywhere outside of my own home. Why in the world would you feel sorry for me? My life is just as full as yours, if not fuller. I don't know you, but hey, I live a very cool life and I don't sit around and feel sorry for myself because I'm in a wheelchair. In fact, it is the wheelchair that enables me to go out and do the same things that most of you guys do. Okay. However, you know, hey, I have my own podcast. I just signed with the modeling agency. You know, how many people can say that? Why would you feel sorry for me? My life is great. But, people, they just have this tendency to think that somehow we are objects of pity. And I love my life and I want you to love my life and I want you to stop giving me those sad looks at Walmart, okay? So I get it. I get why they declined, but honestly, I just would have told the truth so that they understood. I would not have said my child was allergic to the material of the ball. A plastic ball, seriously? Your child's wheelchair is probably made out of more plastic than anything. And give me, this isn't a judgment against her. This is not a judgment. This is my epic mini opinion, right? I just would have said, you know, hey, my son isn't an object of pity. If you want to give him the ball, that's great. But please don't feel sorry for him because he really leads a wonderful life. And I think that was an opportunity for those people to see that, hey, don't look down on disabled people as if we are, you know, oh, look, mom, he's in a wheelchair. Can I give him a ball? You know, that's not what a lot of us are all about. So I think she should have just told the truth. And here's another thing, and I'm going to keep it real. I'm sure there were other children around there bouncing around that would have appreciated the same gesture. Just because you can see a child's wheelchair or even my wheelchair doesn't mean that you can see that child's problems. There were children in that same place probably, in a Chuck E. Cheese, I'm sure, that were hurting from sexual abuse, from child abuse, being bullied, or they were even children who may go hungry from time to time. But you can't see that kind of pain. You can't see when a child's sexually abused. You can't see when a child is being bullied. Those are things that you cannot see, but you can see a wheelchair. And then your brain can make the connection and say, hey, this child is feeling something. This child is to be pitied. Absolutely not. I'm in a wheelchair, okay, but I have problems going on in my life, and almost zero have to do with my chair, okay? I don't have a lot of problems going on in my life, but the problems I do have nothing to do with me sitting in a wheelchair. Not all of us sit around being depressed because we use a wheelchair. In fact, it's the opposite, okay? So the moral of the story is, don't assume a person in a chair has a life any harder because we use them. Or not just wheelchairs, walkers, canes, any scooters, anything. There are so many other factors, and sitting down in life isn't always the worst thing in the world. So let's move on to our topic of the day, and this is our main discussion. And we're going to get away from the kiddies and talk about something a little more adult here. And the question is, and this is actually going to be a 10-part series, a 10-part series, ladies and gentlemen, and any kids listening out there, that we're going to do about Social Security. You guys know I have a YouTube channel, Life Living with Chronic Illness, and I talk about Social Security disability from time to time, and we're going to do a 10-part series about collecting disability payments here in the United States. So the question is, and this is the first in a series of 10, is, are you disabled enough for Social Security, Disability Insurance, or SSI? Over 10 million people receive disability worker benefits from Social Security, with some of those payments going to surviving family members. So we're going to get into the difference between Social Security, Disability Insurance, and SSI in another episode. But the first thing you must determine is if you're disabled enough for either program. Now, that may be kind of silly to ask, but it's an important question. And I assure you that it is a step that many people who have gone on to try and go through this very tedious process miss. Okay? And I can tell you a story about a young lady who had applied for Social Security disability, and I mean, she was having a tough time. She had an autoimmune disease. She was tired every day. I mean, it got to the point where she would have to call her husband after she dragged herself out of her car. He would literally carry his wife lovingly up the stairs, bring her to the house, get her undressed, put her in a bathtub, and get her out of the tub and take her to bed. I mean, this woman, she worked every day because she needed to keep her health insurance, so she didn't have the luxury of you know, getting quitting her job. And she did not understand. She would send in all of her medical papers. She would send in, her doctors were like, look, this woman is disabled. If anybody deserves to get disability, this woman does. And she kept getting turned down. And she could not understand why. And yet she would see other people who claimed to get disability payments, and yet they were out playing tennis. How fair is that? Until someone sat her down and said, hey, the reason why you're still not getting disability and they keep denying you is that you're still working. And ladies and gentlemen, it honestly doesn't matter if when you get out of bed in the morning, you have to throw yourself on the bed. It doesn't matter that you have to get in a bathtub and sit there in hot water for 2 hours, which is what I had to do in order to get my body to move. The fact of the matter is, because she could still get up and go to work, in the eyes of Social Security, she was not disabled. So, that is a problem, that you actually have to be disabled enough not to be working, and then have had to be able to put some money aside, because I guarantee you, you're gonna be turned down the first or even second time. So you're now no longer working. You're gonna lose your health insurance. You don't have that income to help you. And if you're a single person, which I was single, there is no other income. Okay. There is no income. So now you have to figure out, gee, I'm going to have to go without an income, which is what I did for 1.5 years. I didn't have an income for a year and a half. And if it wasn't for being able to get my 401k money and some of my pension money and then my lovely mother, that I wasn't able to do this. So, her name is Tanya. Tanya, say hello.
Hello, everyone.
That's my twin. She's really cool. I used her help as well when she, when I was disabled too. So if it wasn't for the help of my family, and that's funny that the fact that I was speaking about my family shows up at the door. Kyra is also here. Kyra was in a previous episode when she talked about mental illness. Kyra, say hello.
Hello.
Kyra, how are you doing?
Good.
And are you still having any issues at school that you were talking about when we were talking about how dealing with like psychosis?
I still kind of have some issues, but it's not as bad.
And not as bad? Okay. So, have you been to the hospital lately?
For the fourth time.
For the fourth time. So were you hospitalized the fourth time?
Yes.
How long were you hospitalized?
For a week.
For a week?
Yes.
Okay. So to my listeners, I hope my listeners, I'm sure they all wish you very well. And we thank you for coming on to the show and knocking on the door. However, back to this episode, When I got disability, it took a long time, and I'm going to share my story in full in another episode, but my doctor came up to me and was like, so when are you quitting your job? And I was like, what do you mean quitting my job? I can't quit my job. But as time went on, I got sick enough to where I needed to do that. So if you're not sure if you're disabled enough for disability, that's an important distinction here. So you need to ask yourself these questions. One, are you still working? And if the answer is yes, then you're probably not disabled enough to get payments. Two, how severe is your condition? It must be severe enough to restrict you from working. You can still be disabled, and this is important, you can still be disabled, but not disabled enough for payments. Okay. Three, is your condition recognized by the Social Security Administration? They have a listing of impairments that lists all of the major body systems that the administration recognizes as being disabling. So walking, eating, breathing, hearing, and seeing tend to be at the top. And if your condition will interfere with any of those systems, chances are your condition will probably be in that list of impairments. Now, if it isn't, you could still qualify, and we'll get into that into another episode as well. However, there are some conditions that people have that are so disabling, that are so severe, that just a diagnosis will ensure you to get payments. They will not turn you down. You are going to get these payments, but I warn you that your condition will be grave, or will be a very grave diagnosis for you to get these payments. Four, are you able to do the work that you used to do? If your condition is severe enough that it interferes with your ability to do the type of work you did before, then you can move on to the next step. If not, you're still not disabled enough. Can you do other work? And this is where most people get tripped up. This is the part where people kind of get turned down, and told go home. Because I was a bus driver, obviously. Being in a wheelchair stopped me from doing that job, but the question was, could I be trained and do other work? They look at a variety of factors to determine if you qualify doing something else, including your medical condition, your age, your education, your past work experience, and any transferable skills that could follow you to a new position. So as a bus driver, I have customer service skills, so can I take that into another position? Now, someone with a master's degree is going to have a harder time saying, hey, I'm disabled, I can't work, than someone who didn't finish high school. a 50-year-old is going to have a better time saying I'm disabled and not qualifying for another job than a 25-year-old, okay? So age, I was quite young when I got disability. I believe I was 32, 33. So it was harder to make that case, but me being in a wheelchair strengthened my case. And the fact that I don't want to really talk about, get into any personal information, but my education level wasn't that high. Again, so that I get that last part is where a lot of people tend to get tripped up. So in order to be considered disabled for Social Security purposes, an applicant must be unable to perform what's called substantial work. Generally, this means working and earning above a certain amount. In 2019, this means making over $1,220 a month. So if you're making $50 a week stuffing envelopes for extra cash, you can still be considered disabled. That's not substantial work. However, if you're working, it would be hard for anyone to say that you're disabled because you are doing this substantial work no matter how hard it could be. In the story, I told you earlier that the young lady had to be carried to her bed. But the key is she was still able to get up. You know, disabled people simply can't get up. There is no getting up. You can hit my butt with a cattle prod, okay, in the morning, and I cannot get up to do certain things. There's just no way. I'm going to need an inordinate amount of help. I'm going to need somebody to help me get dressed. I'm going to need somebody to help me get in the shower. And that simply just is too much. Okay, so a reasonable person would say this person cannot work with the amount of pain medications that I'm on and the chemotherapy that I take on a daily basis. It would be impossible. I mean, I want to go to sleep talking to you guys right now. Wait, what was I talking about? Anyway, there aren't many jobs out here for somebody like me. So, you know, it would be more, it that works to my benefit. But this is another place where people kind of trip up, because you have to have a doctor that agrees with you that you're disabled. A lot of people decide this on their own, like, hey, I'm disabled, I can't do this, and yet they forget to tell their doctors. And sometimes their doctors are like, well, I'm not that convinced. You know, maybe you can do another job. So you need to be on the same page as your doctor, because that's the person that's going to be filling out your paperwork, okay? So I had a doctor that filled out what was called a residential functional capacity assessment form, which determined whether I could do medium, light, or sedentary work. And the form is going to ask questions like, how long can I sit without pain? Is it 2 hours or 4 hours? So if your doctor doesn't agree, you know, your doctor could say, hey, well, yeah, he or she could sit there for 8 hours without pain. That is going to look bad when you say you're disabled. If you could sit at a desk for 8 hours or even 6 hours, there's work that you can do. However, if your doctor says, nope, she can't even sit there for 2 hours, then that strengthens your case to be disabled. So you need to have a talk with your doctor. That's important. And that's something that so many people miss. And I've talked to a lot of people with disabilities. I've talked to a lot of people who've been trying to get Social Security payments, and that's where they mess up. So if the answers to the questions on the form consistently show that there is little work that you can reasonably perform, then your chances of getting approved skyrocket. So go on our Facebook page, and I'm going to list a document of my personal form that I used. Make sure you print it out. Give it to your doctor. First, look it over and go over in your mind, you know, and ask yourself the same questions. Can I sit down? And be honest. Okay, here's a note. Do not lie. You are going to go against seasoned professionals, and they know when you're lying. Sometimes they'll have you come in and be examined by an independent medical examiner, and they are watching you from the time that you get out of your car to the time that you get back in. Don't tell them stupid stuff like this one lady I overheard said, oh no, I can't even watch TV for 2 hours without pain. I mean, this is ridiculous, of course. And then I saw the woman damn near run to her car with her kids. You know? So tell the truth, okay? Tell the truth. It all works in your favor. So that's all the time that we have today for this episode. Please subscribe to our podcast. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your coworkers. tell everybody about this podcast. Make sure you sign up so you can get notifications whenever a new podcast downloads to your phone or other listening device. Please follow us on Twitter at Chronically The. And come to our Facebook page where we update our podcasts and we share stories. And there's going to be a whole community of people, of listeners, and a support group where you could come and be a mad, chronically ill boy or girl. Be whoever you want to be. Come in and share your stories with us. I love to hear from all of you. I would love to see how many of you are going to respond to our new segment. We're going to print your answers in an upcoming episode. So stay tuned. Keep it locked right here at the Mad Chronically Ill Girl Podcast. I'm your host, Sonya D. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Stop being so mean.